Nobody saw that one coming. Chapter number 14. Book of Psalm, chapter number 14. Tonight we're going to read a picture of two different individuals. We're going to read 14 and 15. But what I want to try with the help of God to get across to us tonight is how close a person that thinks they're righteous is to the first person. And how close a person that thinks that they are unredeemable, unworthy, how close they are to being that second person in Psalm 15. So we're going to read 14 first, and then we'll get down to 15. Psalm chapter 14, verse number 1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works, and there is none that doeth good. And the Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. And they were all gone, sad. They were all together become filthy. There is none that doeth good. No, not one. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge? Who eat up my people as they eat bread and call not upon the Lord? They were they in great fear. For God is in the generation of the righteous, but you have shamed the counsel of the poor because the Lord is his refuge. I know a lot of times we say that this world is a terrible place to be in, and the more you watch the news, the worse that it seems it can get. Every time that the news comes on, every time you get on Facebook or you open up a newspaper, you see something else that's went wrong. Somebody else that's off on drugs. Somebody else that done killed somebody. Something else that's another global war, conflict, something or other. It's always something else. And very seldom do you see another revival. It's always something bad. It's always this. The fool said in his heart, there is no God. There's more of that today than there ever has been. The Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. And they are all gone. There is none that doeth good, no not one. And I understand that David could be reflecting upon his time and the fact that he was lonely. We already found that in chapter 12. But he could also be reflecting back to the times that he read about, of course, of Noah. I believe that God put this here because his word is living and his word never stops making sense. I believe that it can be applied to our day. That in the vast majority, and if you take in and you gather up all the people and you take the percentage that try and seek God, that you might as well not even count it. That's how small it is today. What we don't understand is how far we are from being that person. How close we are to it. How close we are to being that fool. How close we are to being the one that whenever the Lord looks down from heaven, he don't see any good in us. How close we are to being corrupt. How close we are to doing abominable works. And how close we are that we do absolutely no good. All my life, I've heard, and you used to tell kids, we had a DARE program that they did through the sheriff's office in school. And they say, you're one pill away from being addicted. You're one drink away from being a drunk. You're one smoke away from never putting it down again. As Christians, we are in that same shape. But we are one rebellion from God from falling back into the place that he saved us from. And I'm not talking about complete rebellion and separation from God. I'm talking about backsliding. I'm talking about the falling away that the New Testament refers to. He's not talking about saved people, lost people. The New Testament is referring to saved people whenever he talks about the falling away that's coming in the last days. And I don't believe the saved people realize how close we are to that. Most of you remember COVID. That's not something that's already slipped our mind. How easy was it to stop going to church? Whenever the government said you can no longer meet in church, how easy was it to stay home and sleep in on Sundays and sleep all day? How easy was it not to hurry home from work and hurry up and get to church for 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights? How easy was that? I've heard people use the word, it was so nice not to have to rush and get ready for church. My wife starts getting the kids ready at 3 for 7 o'clock church. She has to spread it out because you know they're going to get... Y'all know how it is. I've heard people say how nice it was not to have to rush and hurry and get ready for church. Same thing on Sunday mornings, how nice it was to be able to sleep in, to be able to get up and to make breakfast and to have a brunch and to not have to worry about evening service, just go in and enjoy your family all day. I heard people say it was just like another Saturday. That's exactly how so many people treated it. The thing is some people may have missed church, really, really, really desired to be in church somewhere, and if you had that desire, chances are you could have found a church to be in. But so many Christians were okay with it. They were okay with it. And it's at that point that we realize exactly how susceptible we are to distancing ourselves from God. Exactly how easy it is to backslide, to fall into a leisurely life of I don't have to go to church anymore. If our attitude is I have to go to church and not I get to go to church, then we need to reevaluate going to church anyway. So many times we don't realize that we are one missed service away from becoming this fallen man. That we are one missed prayer. That we are one missed day of reading the Bible away from not reading it at all. We all are creatures of habit. It's been a long day, y'all bear with me. Chances are you put on your pants one leg at a time, and chances are you use the same leg first every time. Go think about it, you do. I use my left leg. I put my left leg in my pants first. And I do that every single time. And I tried tonight to put these pants on with my right leg first. And it was a disaster. It was awful. We are creatures of habit. We like to do things the same way. And we don't like to change it. We don't like people to change up our routines. We naturally are creatures of habit. And those habits are so very easy to form when things are convenient, when things are easy, because serving the Lord is hard. There's very, very little about serving the Lord that's easy. There's very little about sticking with God, about working for God that's easy. To not become this fallen man, to not become a backslider, to not become one that is corrupt and doing abominable works and saying in his heart that there is no God, there are Christians today that say that it don't matter. Not Christians, there's people today that go to church and say that working for God don't matter as long as I go to church. There are people that say that working for God don't matter and living for God don't matter as long as I put my money in the offering plate on Sunday. It don't matter what I do for God as long as I, you know, have done this, 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 and this, as long as I've checked it off the list. And they'll treat salvation, they'll treat the salvation prayer that so many of them say, because this person said, read this and say this and speak this and believe this and you're saved. And they'll say, I've already done that. They treat salvation like a flu shot. Something that you get one time and then you're done. You come to church, you know, Christmas and Easter and be done. And every now and then on Mother's Day and that's it. And we are so very close to being that way that it's not even funny. Paul says that we must run the race. He says that we must fight the fight. Paul uses verbs that are difficult. Has any of you went jogging lately? Like 3, 4, 5, 6 miles? Me either. You know how difficult that would be if we struck out from here? Went down Central Church Road, hooked a right on C.O. Crockett, came up Bernard Crane Road and came back here. Who thinks they could make that loop? Anybody? Oh my goodness. Paul compares our Christian life to races. Paul compares our Christian life to fights because it ain't easy. And it's something that is constant. When I used to play basketball, I could run up and down the court, but if I ever stopped for a free throw, I had to get some oxygen. Running back and forth was simple enough, but stopping and then having to start up again, that was tough. And in our Christian life, it's the same way. It was hard to get back to church after COVID, wasn't it? You can shake your heads up and down. I know it was. It was hard to get back to church after COVID because we'd gotten in a habit of sitting in our pajamas and watching it on Facebook. Folks had gotten in a habit of sitting there with a big bowl of grits and eggs and watching service while their feet was kicked up on the coffee table. Gotten in the habit of not singing and not praying, not reading, not studying. It got routine. And that's the place that we have to avoid because it is so very easy to fall into that habit. I want to read chapter number 15. David describes a different type of person now. In chapter 14, we read of the corruption of man. We read of the fool. We read of the fallen man. Chapter 15, we read of a different man. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle and who shall dwell in thy holy hill? And he's going to answer these two questions. He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. Now, I'm a terrible person about underlining verbs in my Bible because they call us to action. He that walketh, worketh, speaketh. Three things that we have to do if we're going to live for God. Walketh uprightly, worketh righteousness, and speaketh the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil with his neighbor, nor taketh up reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. He that doeth these things shall never be moved. David is referring to a righteous man. If you have a Thompson Bible, mine has these little headings across the top. It says that David describes a citizen of Zion, which he references back to in chapter 14, verse 7. Oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion, where the Lord bringeth back the captivity of his people. Jacob shall rejoice and Israel shall be glad. If they could see, if they could understand the salvation that comes out of Zion, the salvation that comes out of God. And whenever that person realizes and understands the salvation and the mercy and the long suffering that comes from God, then he is transformed into this person. Not just all of a sudden you're a stand-up Christian. It's something that is work. It's hard. I'm not where I'm supposed to be, and chances are you're not quite there yourself. We've been watching Disney movies with Bailey, and I know I reference Disney movies, but I have to reference this one because it proves the point perfectly. Y'all know the movie Mulan. Whenever she's doing her chores, she gets this little dog and she lets him feed the chickens for her. And what she does is she ties a stick to this dog's back and it hangs over her head and there's a little bone on the front of it. And this dog is sitting there, and as soon as this dog sees the bone, the dog runs toward the bone. Well, because the dog's the stick is tied to the dog's back, every step the dog takes, the bone takes a step forward too. And so as the dog runs forward, the bone runs forward. That is the way us chasing righteousness should be. We should never stop running, knowing that we're never going to reach perfection. Does that make sense? Knowing that we're never going to get there. Knowing that we're never going to master it. We should never stop working toward it. And we should never stray from the path. Several times in David's writing, And you can go back to chapter number 1 of Psalms, the last verse in chapter 15, verse 5, the last few words. He says, "He that doeth these things shall never be moved." And if you go back to chapter 1, verse 3, he said that the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. He's speaking again of a righteous man. He's speaking of again that is of a man that is looking for God, that is working for God, that is seeking after God. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth fruit in his season, and his leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. He shall not be moved. Rooted and grounded in God. Chapter 16, verse number 8. I have set the Lord always before me. And whenever the Lord is always before us, whenever the Lord is always in our focus, and if we'll just put blinders on sometimes and focus on the things of God. So many times in our reading and in our studying, we'll sit down to read our Bible and then the phone will ring. Or we'll sit down to read our Bible and there's a basketball game on the TV. Or we'll sit down to read our Bible and a baby will start crying. We'll sit down to read our Bible and then everything goes wrong. You know why? It's hard to read your Bible. The devil don't want you to read your Bible. Your flesh don't want you to read your Bible. He said, "I have set the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand. I shall not be moved." This particular phrase is throughout the Psalms that David wrote. It's easy to slip. It's easy to trip and to fall and to backslide. The trick is not staying there. We understand that we're one service away. That we're one rejection from God away from Him calling us out, calling us home. That we're one breath away, that we're that close to Him saying, "Okay, I'm done. You're coming home." And if we were to meet God right now, are we satisfied with what we've done for Him? If we were to meet God tomorrow, are we okay with our life thus far? If not, chances are next week, and you're going to be asked the same question next week. And whenever you're asked a question next week, has anything changed? Because if I ask you tonight, are you ready to meet God as you are? And you say, "No, I'm not. I'm not either." But then I ask you that next week. Are you ready to meet God? You say, "No." I said, "But has this week been better?
No.
Have you worked harder? Do you have more to show for?" Are we closer to where we need to be today than we were yesterday? Although we're chasing righteousness, although we're chasing God, although we're focused on Him, although we're keeping Him before us, we have to keep moving. We have to keep working. Because if we don't, if we get distracted, and I know that I've used this example before. There was a man walking with Jesus. He was walking with Jesus hand in hand. And as they were walking, this man stopped and said, "Jesus, hold on, there's something shiny over here. I'm going to go get it. You stay right here." Jesus said, "Okay." This man walked over here. He found something shiny. And he picked it up. And then he looked a little further. There's something else shiny. He looked over at Jesus and said, "Jesus, stay right there, I'll be right back." He walked on down a little bit and picked up that second something shiny. And then he looked at Jesus and said, "Jesus, there's something else down here, you stay right there." And by the time he didn't know, he looked back and he could not find Jesus. He could not see Him. He had chased something else. He had chased something different. He had chased something shiny. He had chased the world. He had chased the flesh. He had chased distraction. He had chased everything but the Lord. And there wasn't no problem with him grabbing that first little shiny thing that fell down. Because he could still see Jesus. He wasn't far from Him. And we convince ourselves of that whenever we take a sip of alcohol, knowing that it's wrong. And we say, "Oh, just one ain't going to hurt. One hurts." Whenever we know and we're convicted of our sin and we say, "Oh, one time ain't so bad." one time is so bad. That's how it begins. That's how it starts, with one. And one ain't bad, but two ain't bad either. And before you know it, you eat a whole box of cream puffs. Been there, done that. One ain't bad. Two dozen is a bellyache. How you get from that one to the two dozen, we don't know. It's exactly the way that sin leads us away from God. That is exactly how a Christian can become a backslidden, fallen, used to be Christian that is saved, but God can't use his life. We need to strive to be that person that David describes in chapter 15, verse 2. Who will abide in thy tabernacle, Lord? The man that walketh upright. Man that knows to do good. My wife was presented with an opportunity to talk with some people recently. Whenever she did, she came across some beliefs that were different than ours. You know what she has done ever since she's come across those particular individuals? Every night we'll sit in bed and we'll take one particular thing that they believe that is wrong. I mean, thing that they believe that's different from us. And we'll look for it in the Bible. Because if you can prove it with the Bible, you can argue over it. If you can't prove it with the Bible, then stay away from it. And we dig, and we dig, and we search, and we search, and we look for it. And all that she has done is try to find ways to help them see what is right, what is wrong, so that she can walk uprightly, so that she can speak the truth, so that she can work toward righteousness. That should be our goal as Christians. That should be our goal as parents. That should be our goal as co-workers. That should be our goal as teachers, as friends, as whatever capacity that you interact with other people throughout the day. That should be our goal, to walk uprightly, to work righteousness, to speak the truth, to share Jesus Christ with the world. That is our job. That should be our conviction. And if we maintain focus, chapter 16, verse number 8, if we maintain focus on God, I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore, my heart is glad, my glory rejoiceth, my flesh also shall rest in hope. For thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither will I suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. Thou wilt show me the path of life. You want to know the meaning to life? It is walking with God. It's right there, black and white. Meaning of life. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is the fullness of joy. In thy right hand are pleasures evermore. That is the journey we should be on. That is the place that we should be walking. That is the goals that we should set for our life. My prayer is that as a church, as families, as individuals, that we would not walk the way of the fallen man. That we would understand how close we are to slipping. And we would keep our eyes set on God. We wouldn't get distracted. We wouldn't get confused. We could focus on him. Well, we have a verse of a song. We're going to ask for verse.